just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic. Common sense. Compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. It's Wednesday. Had kind of a crazy Tuesday. We've got plenty to talk about. We have the gag order hearing that was kind of interesting. And then, of course, we had the continuation of Donald Trump's criminal trial directly afterwards with David Pecker, the publisher of the National Enquirer, on the witness stand. And that got a little weird, too. Got a couple of emails to read, and before we get into that, I just want to let you know, had a good night last night, mostly, and you'll understand what I'm saying. My wife and I had the opportunity to go watch my granddaughter for a couple hours while my son had to go to some city meeting or something like that. So we went over and hung out with my granddaughter, and you know how much I love that. She's fun. She's tiring. Even after 2 hours, my wife and I are pretty much wiped out. She went to bed. I'm doing a fucking podcast. But nonetheless, we'll get through it. But what I wanted to tell you is that my granddaughter wanted to play Lions again. And of course, I still get to be meat. I don't even want to talk about this. I don't get it. It seems weird today to me, but my wife told me that I could not call my granddaughter weird, which I wouldn't do anyway, but it just all sits weird with me. And it didn't get really weird until later, because before we were going to leave, she said, "Can we play Lion one more time?" And we said, "All right, what the hell." So she comes over and acting like she's the lion and I'm the meat, and she's clawing at me and stuff. And then she goes down and she's going to fake bite me on the stomach. Okay. She's done it before. It's no big deal. Well, it's a weird deal, but you know, she's four. So you just kind of deal with it. Except this time my shirt was kind of pulled tight over my stomach and she bit me for God's sake. And I kind of whelped a little bit. I said, "Junie, stop, man. You're biting me." And she looked kind of surprised. I was certainly surprised. And then as we're leaving, she says, "Grandpa, I need to give you a hug." I said, "Why?" "Of course you need to give me a hug. You give me a hug every time I leave." She says, "No, I'm going to give you a hug for biting you." I said, "Honey, I'm not mad at you. It just kind of surprised me a little bit." And then when I came home, I pulled up my shirt and she fucking broke the skin, for God's sake. Now, I don't know if it's possible, but is it possible for a 64-year-old grandfather to be traumatized by his 4-year-old granddaughter? I don't know. It's not really a big deal. The whole thing just the kind of shit that happens to me with a regular basis. And when you have a granddaughter who is, frankly, a lot, things get a little crazy sometimes, and we have fun, and I love the kid, and we're getting all excited because her birthday is on Friday. She's going to have a party with her mom and grandparents on that side, and then she's going to come over to our place on Sunday. We're going to have my family over, and there's going to be kids and adults, and she loves that. The pool's right next to the party room, so she'll get a chance to swim with all the other kids. It's going to be a great time, and I'm just going to steer clear of her in case she wants to play Lion again. I'm it's weirding me out. Anyway, let's get to the emails and then get to the business at hand, some of the news that was going on, because there was a lot of shit happening. I wanted to say something too. Somebody, wrote, on the podcast page, they wrote, I was going to print this off, but I forgot to do it. But what they said was, "Yeah, I kind of like your show, but the swearing, the F-bombs were too much. So I'm gone." It's funny when people come to me and start telling me, "Well, you shouldn't swear so much." Like, I'm going to listen to that and respond to that. The one thing I've learned about the radio business when I was in it, there's always going to be somebody criticizing you for something they don't like. And a lot of people will react to that and say, oh, okay, we won't do it anymore. Problem is, you've got a lot of listeners and they all have different takes. You can't please everyone. So as Rick Nelson once said, you just fucking please yourself. So that's what I do. People don't like it. They don't have to listen. People like it or can tolerate it. God bless them. Anyway, we've got an email coming from a gentleman that I had trouble with the name yesterday, I think. And he's from the Netherlands. And he sent me a video so I could get a sense of how his name was pronounced. Apparently, he has a video channel on YouTube. And I only got to watch a little bit of it, so I don't know much about what he's doing, but I'm going to check into it. And his name is it's spelled G-O-S-S-E, and he's from the Netherlands. And the best I could tell, the pronunciation is Gosa. So if I got that wrong, please correct me. But I'm going to watch your videos, too, to see what you're doing. It seemed kind of interesting. It seemed kind of a story. It was about somebody he knew named Johnny. Just check out YouTube. Search G-O-S-S-E, and you'll find it. All right, his email goes as follows. Mike, in the Netherlands, there's a political figure who's viewed almost as messianic figure with a dedicated following akin to the fervent believers. Looks like MAGA with the same not reasonable followers. It's evident that this individual and their political party have ties to Russia. In our multi-party system, currently consisting of 16 parties, this figure holds roughly 25% of the seats in the House. However, forming a majority government requires at least 75 seats plus one. After 150 days of negotiations with three other parties, it's becoming increasingly unlikely due to stark differences, particularly regarding aspects of the Lord and Savior Party's platform that conflict with the Constitution and international agreements, such as proposing a ban on Islamic education and advocating for a Nexit similar to Brexit. We're witnessing significant interference from Russia at various levels, posing a serious threat. The primary concern promoted by the Lord and Savior relates to migration outside the EU. Despite statistical projections suggesting it's within normal parameters and necessary to fill labor demands in the future. When considering Russian interference in the USA, it appears that MAGA is employing similar tactics to the Dutch Lord and Savior, as well as those observed in Poland and Hungary. What is it you're thinking with this? Well, it sounds like we've got a bit of a pandemic going, a pandemic of dumb, crazy motherfuckers all over the world. We certainly have MAGA in this country. We're doing our best to extinguish them, but I've heard tell of similar situations around the world. Of course, we have Bibi Netanyahu in Israel, who's kind of a mini Donald Trump. We have dictators and fascists all over the world. Well, not all over the world, but smattered here and there. And of course, now you tell us about this person in the Netherlands. So it's interesting. It's almost like these people are starting to bubble up after being hidden under rocks for so long, like a fever blister. But that fever blister will pop. It will be attended to medicinally. And it will be eradicated ultimately. I think that's maybe what we're looking at. These people are rising to the surface and they will ultimately disappear because most people don't cotton to that kind of behavior and that thought process. At least I'm hoping that's the case. I don't know really what to think. I am surprised we are in the situation we are in now. Prior to Donald Trump, I had no idea, no thought process that that could happen. But here we are. We've already stepped back in history. We are no longer progressing. We have stepped back. We will not progress, and Netherlands won't progress, and Israel won't progress until we get rid of these fucks and get some people who really care about the people in their respective countries and the country itself, as opposed to creating chaos and dissension in their countries. I mean, frankly, that's what this is about. That's what Donald Trump is about. That's what Netanyahu's about. And apparently this particular politician in the Netherlands is similar. I think it's a pandemic of sorts. And like any pandemic, it will ultimately be extinguished and it will go away and hopefully forgotten. Not forgotten too much, though. Much like any other disaster we have in our countries, we need to remember them. Otherwise, we're destined to repeat it. And so, you know, whether it be 9/11 or Donald Trump, we've got to remember what happened, try to figure out how it happened, and do everything we can to make sure it never happens again. I was thinking about a T-shirt that would look good. Have it, you know, a regular Trump T-shirt where it says Trump across the top, and then underneath it, instead of 2020 or 2024, just write "Never Again." Not an incredibly creative idea, but it gets the point across. All right, thank you, Gosa. The next email, the last email on this show. Hi, Mike. I thought you're noticing Dirty Diaper Donnie's comments on not deducting the payments to Cohen were spot on. It's like you say all the time, let him talk and he'll fuck himself every time. I'd hate to have him for a client as you can't control him. Yet no matter what, if you let Donald Trump talk, he will either confess to a past crime or implicate himself in a new crime. And when he was talking about this whole situation with Michael Cohen, I think I mentioned it. Well, I did mention it yesterday. He's referring to it. He was talking about how he paid Michael Cohen legal fees. He put on the ledger that it was legal fees, and that's perfectly legal. But the fact of the matter is, that's not the issue. The issue is what you actually paid that for. And the fact that you lied on the ledger and lied to the government that of what you were trying to do. That's where the law is broken. But then later, as he's trying to sell this more and more, he says something just in passing. And as I said, I don't know that everybody caught it, but he said, we didn't even write that off. Like that's supposed to make it better. When in fact, it makes it sound questionable, a little sketchy. I mean, if you're a big businessman and you have legal fees, of course you're going to write that shit off. Why in this particular instance did you decide not to write it off? Well, maybe because if the IRS dug into it, it might cause you some problems. Or the other part of it is something I mentioned, the reason he gave Michael Cohen more than the $130,000 is because when Michael Cohen gets income as opposed to a repayment of a loan, he's going to have to pay taxes on it. So Michael Cohen takes out a loan on his house. He pays the $130,000, and then Donald Trump pays him back. If he only pays him back $130,000, now Michael Cohen is going to have to pay taxes on that, and he won't really be getting his money back. He'll get a portion of his money back. Donald Trump is pretty cheap. He's known for stiffing people, but he must have really wanted this done because he gave him more to cover the taxes and whatever else. So anyway, that's what we were talking about there. The email goes on to say, I think you might be onto something about us getting Judge Mershon's decision tomorrow. It makes sense that we'd get on the off day, and then he can deal with the fallout on Thursday. I still think that ultimately he won't stop until he spends time in a cell, and even then won't understand what this emailer is talking about. And we're going to talk about this very shortly, is the gag order hearing. The fact that Donald Trump violated the gag order. Now, they had the hearing today, and it didn't go well for Donald Trump or his lawyers. We'll talk more about that. But Judge Juan Marchand says he's going to reserve his decision on this gag order. Now, remember, this was before the start of the trial yesterday. And I have a feeling that he wanted to get through this trial. If he was to say, yeah, you violated the gag order, here's your punishment, and if you continue to do it, here's what's going to happen. That may have turned the entire day, the entire session in court, into a shit show, and he probably didn't want to do that. I thought he might give his decision at the end of the day yesterday or at some point today. Now, I don't know if he'll do that or if he'll wait to the weekend or whatever, but I think it has to do with trying to avoid disrupting the case as much as possible because he knows who he's dealing with. Donald Trump, a fucking child. Anyway, the email goes on to say, I saw an article about the Disgraced Act today, sponsored by Benny Thompson. It would strip Secret Service protection from anyone convicted of a state or federal felony and sentenced to at least 1 year in prison. This might settle some of the concerns about jailing Trump, though Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene are trying to say that this is part of a Democratic plot to have Trump killed in prison. That tells me she is expecting him to go to prison. Thanks, Eric. And what he's talking about is this bill that's being proposed. Like Eric said, if someone's convicted of a state or federal felony, any Secret Service protection would be taken away. And that kind of makes sense. In as far as do we want Donald Trump killed in prison? I don't know about anybody else, but I don't. Frankly, I know what Donald Trump's future holds. I know it's not going to be pleasant. So frankly, I hope he lives a long and healthy life to experience all the other pain from his actions, the punishment for his actions. All right, let's talk about this gag order thing. Judge Juan Marchand, who is overseeing former President Donald Trump's trial in Manhattan, had kind of a fiery hearing on Tuesday about whether to find Mr. Trump in criminal contempt for repeatedly violating the provisions of the gag order. Now, while the judge did not issue an immediate ruling, he engaged in a heated back and forth with one of Mr. Trump's lawyers, scolding him for his failure to offer any facts in his defense of the former president. Justice Juan Marchand said this to the lawyer, You've presented nothing. Todd Blantz, soon after he says, you're losing all credibility in this court. He said, you're not answering the questions. You presented nothing and you're losing all credibility in this court. That's pretty devastating for a defense lawyer in a trial that's just begun. That doesn't set a great tone for Todd Blanche or Donald Trump going forward over the next couple of months. But this is what happens when a lawyer agrees to just say whatever Donald Trump says, because Donald Trump doesn't know shit about the law. He's just trying to play his game and he thinks he's winning, but he's losing horrifically. Now, Judge Marchand's rebuke came moments after prosecutors in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office had complained that Mr. Trump willfully violated the gag order by making 10 public statements on social media on his campaign website that attacked two likely witnesses and the jury. The prosecutors pointed to Mr. Trump's attacks on Michael Cohen, a lawyer who had helped Trump arrange the hush payments to a porn star. The prosecutors also told Judge Marchand that a post Mr. Trump made going after the woman, Stormy Daniels, violated the gag order. Prosecutors flagged another post for Justice Marchand, saying it was even more troubling. In it, Mr. Trump had quoted a Fox News commentator, Jesse Waters, denigrating potential jurors in a case as undercover liberal activist. Justice Marchand imposed the order on Trump in late March, barring him from public statements about any witnesses, prosecutors, jurors, or court staff. But within 1 week after Mr. Trump had found a loophole in that order and repeatedly attacked the judge's daughter. Now, Marchand expanded it to cover the relatives of the court staff members and relatives of lawyers working on the case. Now, Christopher Conroy, a prosecutor, told Justice Marchand on Tuesday that Mr. Trump had broken the order repeatedly and hasn't stopped. Mr. Conroy added that former president had made statements violating it even right here in the hallway outside the courtroom. He knows he's not allowed to do that, Mr. Conroy said of Mr. Trump, and he does it anyhow. Todd Blanche rejected that argument, telling the judge that Mr. Trump had never willfully violated the order. Mr. Blanche instead tried to paint his client's statements as legitimate responses to a barrage of political attacks. You know, Donnie, someone hits him, he's got to hit back twice as hard. Now he goes on to say, Mr. Cohen in particular, and also Ms. Daniels, have ramped up their political attacks and their attacks on him as a candidate in the weeks leading up to the trial. Mr. Blanche said his argument to Justice Marchand was that Mr. Trump should be allowed to respond. Now, Judge Marchand was skeptical, all but pleading with Mr. Blanche at one point to make a more substantive legal argument. I hate to keep coming back to this, but you're not offering anything to support your arguments, he said. Prosecutors have asked Justice Marchand to fine Mr. Trump $1,000 for each of his violations of the gag order. And they also asked the judge to warn Mr. Trump that if he continues to violate the order, he could face jail time. Now, I don't know what he's going to do, but I would bet that Justice Marchand, it's the New York Supreme Court justice. I think he's pretty pissed right now, not only at Donald Trump, but at the lawyers from basically wasting time in the court with this bullshit arguments, no evidence, and not listening to what the judge said. So I'm not sure what he's going to do. I'm not sure when he's going to do it. My sense is sometime today, because then they'll have the weekend to cool everything off and then start back up. I think on Tuesday. I don't think they're in court on Monday. Apparently Monday may be a day off, and I'm not sure why. It may be because of a religious holiday, and because I'm not religious, and because I was raised Lutheran, I don't know all the religious holidays. But anyway, we'll see what Judge Marchand does and see what kind of punishment he doles out. It's conceivable he'll charge $1,000 for all 10 of the violations, which means $10,000, which isn't shit to Donald Trump. But it sets him up for the big fall. And the big fall is, once they fine him the $1,000, if he violates again, then the hammer will come down. It's like he's been given a warning. Not like Donald Trump hasn't had plenty of fucking warnings at this point. But the fact is, they probably have to give him that one chance, as much as none of us want to see it. And so if he violates it again afterwards, and you know that's going to happen. I mean, David Pecker is going to be on the stand some more. We don't know how long he's going to be there. And here's a guy that is his buddy, but also his partner in crime when it came to the catch and kill stories and paying Stormy Daniels and working with Stormy Daniels and all that. There's going to be a lot of things said. Now, the interesting thing is that Donald Trump hasn't berated David Pecker as yet, and a lot has been released. A lot of damning information and evidence has been released by David Pecker in this testimony. But Donald Trump has kept his mouth shut about this guy. I'm not sure why that is. Donald Trump doesn't really exercise a lot of self-control, so it's kind of surprising that he would hold back in this situation. So once there's been a determination about the gag order, we'll get a sense of Donald Trump's mental capacity or his emotional capacity in this circumstance. Remember, he's going to be there 4 days a week, 6 to 8 hours a day, every week for the next 2 months. Donald Trump is clearly having problems handling this. I heard him talking after yesterday's court day, and he was just rambling on and on and on. And that's when he came up with the thing that what he did was perfectly legal in the gag order, and that he didn't even write it off, which was a mistake on his part. I hope I'm not the only one that caught it. I hope the lawyers, the prosecutors caught it, because it's very telling. Donald Trump is very cheap. He doesn't pay people more than they are intended to be paid, and he doesn't miss writing anything off. If nothing else, he would write a bunch of shit off that he couldn't write off just to get a break from taxes. So it'll all be very interesting. Now, here's the fucked up thing. I've told you before, Donald Trump is dumb. And as the previous emailer said, just let him talk. He'll fuck himself every time, which he has continued to do outside of court. So now we have this hearing, this gag order hearing. Then there's a break. And then they start the trial back up with David Pecker on the stand. Now, in this break, it's going to be a long day. Well, not really. It was a short day in court, but long enough for Donald Trump. You would think you'd want to relax, maybe get a Diet Coke, just chill out, get ready for the next session in court. But what does Donald Trump do? After coming off this hearing for the gag order and his violations of the gag order, what does he do? Well, he violates the motherfucker again. He gets on Truth Social, punches out at least two posts on Truth Social, railing on everybody and violating the gag order again. That's what I've told you about this guy. He is a fucking incorrigible child. He can't be reined in. This is why there's got to be some kind of serious accountability here. Finding him $10,000 isn't going to do it. It isn't going to stop him from doing it again. He's not going to stop until he's put in prison for a day or two just to let him cool his heels. Now, I know Donald Trump, and I know a lot of you are thinking this, well, that's exactly what he wants. He'll go into prison. He'll be the martyr. He'll be the victim, and then he'll fundraise off of it. And that's probably true. But what I don't think Donald Trump is counting on is that once he gets in there, it will be fucking unpleasant. Absolutely unpleasant. You hear Michael Cohen talk about his stint in jail, and it didn't go well, and he last place he wants to go is back there. And Donald Trump, if he's put in jail even for 6 hours, he'll be shitting himself, and he won't know what to do. Again, he's all about control. And if he thinks he has no control in this court case, which he doesn't, it's going to get largely worse if he even spends one day in prison. I don't think these people will treat him any differently in a short-term type of situation. Now, if he's in jail for a long time, maybe a bunch of dumb prisoners will make him their hero or make him their hero or something. But you lock him down for a day or two, that is going to drive him fucking crazy. He won't know what to do with himself. And then when he gets back out and comes back into the trial, I just don't think he has the wherewithal to behave. He can't help but start spouting stuff. Donald Trump truly believes that he can talk himself out of anything and that he can win simply by punching back anybody that punches him. And that has worked for him while he was the president, when he had some power, and when he ran his companies, when he had some power. But he has no power now. He's acting like he has power, but he has none. He has no power. And when he tries to do that, when he comes back after whatever the punishment is, it's going to be hard for him. It's going to be incredibly hard for him. This guy has a mental illness. I don't know if it's as simple as ADD or deeper into some neurosis or some psychotic behavior. I mean, without question, he's a narcissistic and sociopathic. But does it go beyond that? I mean, even narcissists and sociopaths will stop doing something if they're beaten down hard enough. Donald Trump, throughout his life, though, has never paid a price, has never been held accountable. So what he's experiencing now is completely foreign. He has no idea what to do. So when a guy like this, who thinks emotionally and just reacts, he's going to fucking do everything. He is panicking. It may not look like it on the outside, but inside, in that fucked up head, he is absolutely panicking. And when he panics, no telling what he will do. I'm amazed by the lawyers. The lawyers have been willing to set aside anything they know to be legally expedient, the things they should be doing when they're in court, set them aside and just do whatever Donald Trump tells them. I mean, how many times does Donald Trump have to embarrass them before they say, fuck this, I'm just doing the right thing henceforth, and fuck Donald Trump? but they still don't. They still don't. And this is why I've said some of these people really are selling their soul, because these people are going to be doing things that are going to upset the courts. They may get sanctioned. They may get disbarred. We've already seen a number of them get disbarred and sanctioned. Why these people would risk that, I have no fucking clue. It makes no goddamn sense. But that's what they're doing. And and as the court case goes on, we'll see more and more, and the circus will get wilder because the evidence will come out. This David Pecker, he's setting the tone for the whole trial. He's a fact-based witness, so he's kind of building the table here of where it all started and how it all went down. And then we're going to get the people close to Donald Trump, Cohen, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, Hope Hicks. They're all going to come in. And the interesting thing is, at one time, all these people were close and tight and loyal to Donald Trump. Now, all of a sudden, they are witnesses for the prosecution. And I got to tell you, the prosecution would not bring them in if they were going to be of any help to Donald Trump. I don't even know who Donald Trump's going to call as a witness. He may not call anybody. He's just trying to, his lawyers are trying to discount this and plant a seed of deniability in this, because that's all that has to happen here. The prosecution has to prove what they're saying, and the defense, all they have to do is throw in or create a shadow of a doubt. Now, they're trying to do that, and I will tell you, it's not going very well. They're not doing a good job, and they're pissing off the judge in the process. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Well, first we had the gag order hearing, and we know how that went. We already talked about it. But then directly after that, after the break, after Donald Trump posted a couple of more gag rule violations on Truth Social, they started the trial again, and of course David Pecker was still on the stand. David Pecker is apparently a former magazine executive. He was the publisher of the National Enquirer, quite the respected publication. Now, Pecker was previously the publisher of National Enquirer. In that role, he engaged in the unusual practice of catch and kill, in essence, securing the rights to publish a story in order to quash it. Now, Pecker testified he did this to assist Donald Trump. He went as far as saying, "What can I do to help the campaign?" Now, his testimony was part of the first ever criminal trial for a former president. Trump's got 34 felony counts, as you know, for paying Stormy Daniels $130,000 to keep her mouth shut. So the money was intended to stop Daniels from going public with her allegation that she had a sexual encounter with Trump roughly a decade previously. Donnie must have been worried about this. It must not have gone well, because he was worried about somebody coming back and talking about it 10 years later. The payment to Daniel was made by Trump's then attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, as we know. Later, legal retainer payments totaling $420,000 were made from Trump's business to Cohen. Now, the prosecution's case is that these were falsely filed as business expenses with the aim of concealing the fact that Daniels had been paid off. Trump, of course, denies having sex with Daniels or doing anything legally improper, and has claimed that payments were legitimate legal expenses and that, of course, he's being victimized. Big-time victim, old Donnie Trump. Now, some of the takeaways from Tuesday's testimony. The most striking thing about Pecker's testimony was how directly he spoke about his efforts to use his magazine to power and help Donald Trump's campaign. He put flesh on bones of the stories besides that of Daniels, where the tabloid had engaged in catch-and-kill tactics. Now, again, the catch-and-kill scam isn't illegal. Nobody's going to jail for that. The whole point of this is Donald Trump said they were legal fees and they were intended for Stormy Daniels, but with a middleman being Michael Cohen. Now, considerable time was spent on the tale of Dino Sajudin. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but you know who he is. Dino the doorman, former doorman at the Trump Tower, who contended that Trump had fathered a child out of wedlock. Now, Pecker said, I made the decision to purchase the story because of the potential embarrassment it had to the campaign to Mr. Trump. And Donald Trump said it had nothing to do with the campaign. You see what I'm saying? This didn't go well for Donald Trump. Now, Pecker and his staff ultimately concluded Dino, the doorman story, was untrue, according to reporters in the court. Mentions of it seemed to irritate Donald Trump. You think Donald Trump does have some illegitimate children out there someplace? Maybe this story isn't true. But he's got a long history of sexually assaulting and using women, so it wouldn't be surprising. The National Enquirer's power wasn't solely about silencing stories, though, and here's where it gets kind of interesting, because they were all intended to help Trump. It also ran stories that damaged his rivals for the 2016 GOP nomination. Yeah, he was putting out fake stories about Hillary Clinton, about Ted Cruz, about any number of other people. And these were just wild, whacked out stories. I mean, as much as I don't like Ted Cruz, you remember the story that said that Ted Cruz's father assassinated JFK? I mean, fucking A. That was reported in the National Enquirer. And no validity to it at all, but they put it out there with the intent of helping Donald Trump win the election, win the nomination and the election in 2016. Now, in Pecker's account, Cohen would call him, suggesting the tabloid target candidates who seemed to be posing the biggest threat to Trump. Now, see, this is what we've got to remember about Cohen. Remember when Cohen first came to the forefront? Everybody hated that motherfucker. He was a thug when he worked for Donald Trump. He was threatening people. He was pressuring people. Michael Cohen, make no mistake, he's not a good guy, and I don't really care what fucking happens to him. People starting to love him now because he's speaking out against Donald Trump, but why wouldn't he? He had to pay a heavy price for being Donald Trump's toady and showing his loyalty to Donald Trump, and then Donald Trump doesn't show loyalty anymore. I could see why Michael Cohen would want to get him back. Now, that's not to suggest he's lying to do that. He doesn't have to do that. We know exactly what Donald Trump did, and Michael Cohen was right there to witness it. Now, one example was a story, again, about Ted Cruz's dad somehow connected to the assassination of President Kennedy. The relationship between Trump and the National Enquirer was not a one-way street, according to Packer. His close relationship with then-candidate helped fuel new standstills. Trump, who has in the past called himself a ratings machine on TV, appears to have had a similar impact on the Enquirer's sales. So a lot of people are asking, why would David Pecker do this for Donald Trump? Well, it's kind of nice if you get a guy that you're supporting and doing a lot of good work for, and he ends up being the president. That could be helpful. But in addition to that, Donald Trump is allowing him to put his face on the National Enquirer on the cover. That's the money shot, if you will. People walk in grocery lines, they see it sitting there and grab it just because of what's on the front. And apparently when Donald Trump was on the cover of the National Enquirer, it sold like motherfucking gangbusters. Every time I think about the National Enquirer, I remember my mom. My mom was big into those scandal sheets. I don't think she believed any of it. I just think she thought it was entertaining. We'd go to her house. She might be watching one of the kids or something like that. And all across the table, she'd have the National Enquirer, the Star, and like six other ones that were all just fucking crazy. And I love reading them because they were so ridiculous. I didn't believe any of it, of course, but it was entertaining. And, you know, that was the goal of the Enquirer, to sell as many papers as possible. Now, there was a time when they sold millions of these things, and I think they're down to 150,000 a week now at this point. It's not quite the same as it was in the 70s and 80s. But Donald Trump wanted as much help as he could get. So he had this catch and kill campaign to keep any bad stories coming out about him. And I don't know if you understand how the catch and kill thing works. What happens is, say, Stormy Daniels comes along and is going to talk about a sexual tryst with Donald Trump. Well, then David Pecker would come along in the National Enquirer and say, I want to buy your story and exclusivity for it. So that means he buys the story. He has exclusivity. He doesn't run it, but because he has exclusivity, it can't be run anywhere else, thereby helping Donald Trump pretty much silence some of these scandalous stories that were to come out. Now, it's interesting, Donald Trump keeps saying, well, I only did it so I didn't embarrass my family. That's very interesting, because the fact of the matter is they had them sign, you know, Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal signed the non-disclosure contracts. And I think I brought this up yesterday, non-disclosure contracts. But after the election was over, they released him from those NDAs. That's kind of telling. And this is what Donald Trump is having to deal with. He's not a very smart criminal. He's not good at covering his tracks. And now these tracks are being revealed. And each time they are, it's showing that Donald Trump is guilty as fuck. All right, so we've got no trial today, no trial, no courtroom today. I think they start up again Thursday and Friday of this week. Presumably, David Pecker will be on the stand for a little while longer. Maybe not. I don't know. I didn't watch the end of it. I presume Pecker's going to be back at least for a short time. And then they've got a host of other, literally a murderer's row, as I said the other day, of witnesses. The most compelling thing about these witnesses is that they aren't somebody that would have been adversarial to Donald Trump. These are all people that were close in Donald Trump's circle and were very loyal to him at one point. Somehow, some way, now Alvin Bragg has gotten these formerly loyal and very tight confidants to Donald Trump now to testify against him. That tells you how much serious trouble Donald Trump is in. His closest confidants are the one that are rolling on him. All right, believe it or not, there were some other things going on, kind of important things going on in Congress in spite of what was going on with Donald Trump. Now, the Senate on Tuesday approved the long-awaited U.S. aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, sending the bill to President Joe Biden's desk for his signature and reaffirming U.S. commitment to its allies abroad after months of delays caused by intra-party Republican warfare on Capitol Hill. And that's, you know, that's a welcome relief. We needed to do something with Ukraine, certainly. Russia was getting the upper hand, and we need to put a stop to that. And the only way we can do that is provide money to Ukraine, and now we will. This bill will go to Joe Biden. He will sign it, and then things will get underway. Now, senators voted 79-18 in favor of the House passed $95 billion foreign aid package, which includes $61 billion for Ukraine, $8 billion for Taiwan, and $26 billion for Israel and humanitarian aid. The legislation also includes a controversial provision forcing the popular social media app that we all know and love, TikTok, to be sold or to face a ban in the United States. The bill picked up more support since the last time the chamber voted on a similar package in February. 10 senators changed their votes to advance the measure on Tuesday. Today, the Senate sends a unified message to the entire world. America will always defend democracy in its hour of need. That was said by Chuck Schumer, Senate Majority Leader. We tell our allies, we will stand with you. We tell our adversaries, don't mess with us. We tell the world, we will do everything to defend democracy and our way of life. This is an important day for America and a very important day for freedom-loving countries around the world. That's what Mitch McConnell said, taking a bit of a victory lap after spending months trying to build GOP support for the bill. He went on to say, I think we've turned the corner on the isolationist movement, the retiring Republican leader added. Blaming commentators on the far right, including Fox News host Tucker Carlson and former President Donald Trump, for contributing to the delays. Now, whether the Republican Party has rejected isolationism for good is debatable. However, in the House, 112 Republicans voted against the foreign aid package, more than a majority of the conference, and the job of the House Speaker Mike Johnson still hangs in the balance as a small but vocal band of far-right members continue to push to kick his ass out, led by Marjorie motherfucking Greene. Now, in the Senate, more Republicans ended up supporting the foreign aid package, even though it didn't include provisions to toughen security on the U.S.-Mexico border that they had initially demanded last year. Yeah, they demanded it, and of course, some people bitched about it, Republicans, in this particular bill. All anybody really had to say is, listen, we had a bipartisan bill. It was the most stringent bill regarding the border in this country's history, and Republicans shut it down. They fucking shut it down. So they don't really have a lot of room to talk. Now, Mitch McConnell said there's no question the delay was harmful. Senator Lindsey Graham, one of the Republicans who switched his position in support of the bill, argued that allowing Russia to win in Ukraine would mean more costly U.S. engagement in the future. Yeah, that's what we've been saying all along, but you motherfuckers have been pushing back. Now, only three senators who caucus with the Democratic Party oppose the bill because of its approach to Israel. First one, Bernie Sanders, Senator Peter Welch, and Senator Jeff Merkley. Sanders said he was disappointed the Senate rejected his request to vote on an amendment that would have ended unconditional U.S. support for Israel, which has killed and wounded over 100,000 Palestinians, two-thirds of whom are women and children. That's a tough situation, because to be perfectly honest with you, we have issues with Hamas, we have issues with Iran, we have issues with Israel and what they do with innocent people. As I've often said, I don't have a dog in the fight, so I'm not going to wade into it. And I think somebody like Bernie Sanders, Jeff Merkley, and Peter Welch all voted against it because they knew it wasn't going to stop it. As much as they have their issues with Israel, they know how dangerous it would be to not fund Ukraine. That's really the most important thing here, the most time-sensitive, is helping Ukraine push Russia back. That is very serious. And I'm not saying the Israeli-Hamas war isn't serious. It is. We are allies of Israel, so we do have to offer a certain amount of support. That's kind of our responsibility. But I think we've seen Joe Biden trying to do some things to try to quell the fighting, try to get humanitarian aid to the people in Gaza. That is a mess. That is a shit show. And now we're seeing all kinds of protests at colleges around the country about this. What I fail to understand is, how is it Joe Biden's fault? He's not the president of Israel. He supports our ally, which he's supposed to do. He's trying to do what he can to be a mediator and get this straightened out. What more do you want this motherfucker to do? Jesus Christ. Now, I'm sure there's plenty of people that will disagree with me on this. But, you know, it is what it is. Now, the one situation, I was a little surprised by this. Might even say I was wrong, but I didn't know for sure. It was just my guess. Of course, the Senate passed the bill. We know that. And tucked inside a provision that could lead to a TikTok ban in the United States. Now, I heard a few takes on this. I heard one representative say it would be separate from the other three bills and it could be either voted for or voted against. That wasn't the case as it went to the Senate. It may have been in the House, but not in the Senate. The TikTok ban was passed in the House. It went to the Senate, and the Senate had to vote on all four parts of the bill in order for it to pass. And it was kind of a trick that Republicans and Democrats played in this situation. You put the TikTok ban in with Ukraine funding, Israeli funding, humanitarian effort for the folks of Gaza, Taiwan, and all this shit. And if you don't like the TikTok ban, you vote against it, then you vote against all that other bullshit. You put people in a corner there, and they really had no choice. So they did vote to technically look into banning TikTok. Now, as I've said, I didn't think the Senate would do that because the ramifications electorally are devastating. There's 170 million Americans that use TikTok. Now, I'm personally going to find out who, I'm going to get a list of those people who voted against it, specifically the Democrats, because they need to be called into account for this. The reason for attempting to divest TikTok or shut TikTok down is a little sketchy when you've got a lot of other social media apps and just other businesses in this country that are tied much deeper with the Chinese, but nobody's talking about them. The thing about it is the Chinese government only owns about 20% of TikTok. Hell, we've got fucking Americans that own percentages of that company. And so the fact that they voted this, it will go to Joe Biden. He will sign it. I don't want people freaking out. Nothing's going to happen in the near future. First of all, after Joe Biden signs it, there's 6 months to try to divest or sell off TikTok to an American buyer. Well, even if they find a buyer that might be a possibility, it's going to take a lot longer than 6 months to get that fucking deal done, if they even get the deal done. Because you see, TikTok has a lot of money, as you might guess. And you can probably guess that there is going to be some motherfucking lawsuits. And we know what happens when you get lawsuits in it. They'll go Donald Trump on this motherfucker and drag it out for 2 or 3 years. By the time they actually get to the point that they can ban TikTok, TikTok will be a less popular app and something else will come along. So I'm not too worried about this. Nothing immediately is going to happen. And even if they do the ban, what that means is once they do the ban, it's not going to be available in the app stores anymore. There will be no new updates. So even after that, if all of us have TikToks updated at the end before they cancel it, we're probably good for another year beyond that to continue to do what we do. There won't be new users of the app because it won't be in the app stores. But this is a fucking mess, and it's probably not going to have a significant effect on anybody on TikTok in the foreseeable future. So if you're freaking out about this, or the media or the internet is coming to you saying, oh my God, the sky is falling, don't get too upset about it. I am surprised the Senate passed it, but they were put in a situation where they had no choice. So, okay, that happened. But just because it passed and it's going to be signed by Joe Biden, that doesn't stop the lawsuits and the delays and all the other bullshit with this. So don't freak out about it all that quickly. It's not something that's going to happen tomorrow, in spite of the fact some people will try to get you to believe that. Now, senators voted 79 to 18 for legislation that includes the provision forcing TikTok's Chinese parent company, ByteDance, to divest of the popular social media platform. It specifically gives ByteDance 9 months. Oh, I thought it was 6 months. It's 9 months to sell its stake in the company, and gives the U.S. president the option of extending that timeline by 3 more months. So see what happens. It's 9 months. They aren't going to get anything done. It's too big a deal. Even if they find a buyer, we're going to have to come up with a lot of money. Steve Mnuchin says, I want to buy TikTok. And if that happens, it'll go the same route that Twitter did with Elon Musk. It'll turn into a shit show on TikTok and people will go elsewhere. But they passed this in the Senate. President Joe Biden is expected to sign it quickly, as it includes the funding for Ukraine. His signature on it will start the clock on the potential TikTok ban too. And again, they have 9 months to try to divest. I don't even know if they can do it or are willing to do it. I mean, what you have to understand about TikTok, you think, well, America shuts you down. They're going to act really fast. Now, America is important to them because they probably make a lot of money from having the app here, but they're all over the world. And the amount that America represents to TikTok in terms of all their users is like 3 or 4%, maybe less than that. So it's not a huge hit on them for their business. It's not going to shut down their business. And the question would be if a client like the United States says, we aren't going to use you anymore unless you divest, unless you sell off your company. Well, if the client only represents 2, 3, 4% of their entire business, you think they're going to fucking do that? I don't think so. I don't think it will happen. We'll see, though. Now, Congress is not acting to punish ByteDance. This is coming from Maria Cantwell, a senator from Washington. They're not trying to punish TikTok or any other individual company. Congress is acting to prevent foreign adversaries from conducting espionage, surveillance, maligned operations, harming vulnerable Americans or servicemen and women, and our U.S. government personnel. Fair enough. But what about Facebook? What about Instagram? What about all the social media platforms? What about fucking Truth Social, for God's sake? What about that? Seems strange that you're focusing on TikTok, and a lot of us on TikTok know what's going on. When you have the mainstream media, we've got the government being able to control it to a certain extent. They cannot control anything on TikTok, and a lot of valuable information is getting out, information that they may not like getting out. So they want to establish some control. Again, everything in government takes fucking forever, and this is really a touchy situation. It's one thing if they went to a corner store and said, you got to sell this off or we're going to shut you down. That would be easy enough for them to do. But we're talking about ByteDance or TikTok, and we're talking a multi-billion dollar company. With that much money, they're not going to be easy to get rid of. So if you're worried about TikTok, don't worry about it as yet. It'll go forever, and then we'll get into another administration and things will probably change. So just sit back, relax, enjoy TikTok, and we'll continue to push forward and we'll be fine. Senate Minority Whip John Thune said he's very pleased that the potential TikTok ban is part of the foreign aid package. Well, of course you are. Then it forces people to act on it, and then they can say, well, I didn't really want to do it, but I wanted the foreign aid. That all that did is give these fucks that voted for it reasonable deniability. Oh, I want TikTok. Because they know it's an election risk. All these people who love TikTok, who use TikTok, now their representatives or their senator votes against it. They go, oh, no. I wanted to keep it, but I couldn't because it was tied into the bill. But the reason they tied it into the bill is to get that reasonable deniability because they wanted to vote against it, but they didn't want to take the heat from the constituency. Well, as far as I'm concerned, they need to get some heat. And as I told you before, what I think the best thing to do is, and I always do this, and is let's take the first problem, get that fixed. Then we'll look at the next problem. Look, even if they do find a buyer to do it, we've got 9 months. We've got 6 months to the election. The election happens, the Democrats win, and we've got another 3 months, and the president could add another 3 months onto it. I'm suspecting that's what's going to happen. It's going to go out another year from now. And by that time, the Democrats will be in power. The whole climate will change. The whole situation will change. and we'll see something totally different. That's why I'm saying don't get too excited about this. It's not, a lot of people think when that vote hits and Joe Biden signs it, they're going to flip up a switch and TikTok is no more. That's not how it works. It's going to be a long, drawn-out process. Fuck, I'm 64 years old. I may be dead by the time they cancel TikTok. So anyway, I don't want you to worry about that. I was surprised the Senate voted to make TikTok divest itself. I'd heard about the possibility that it would be included in with the other three bills. And then I heard one rep say, yeah, they're probably not going to do that, and the TikTok ban probably won't pass. I took that, it was a Democrat, and I took that as what makes common sense. And I figured that's what they would do. But sure enough, they come along and do what you don't expect. You can always expect the unexpected, and that's what we've gotten. But once there looks like there's going to be any imminent possibility that TikTok's going to shut down, as long as it continues to be as popular as it is, there is going to be a huge pushback. And these politicians are going to tuck their dicks between their legs, and they're going to start talking a different tune. Trust me, it's just too damaging. We've got to get through this election. We can't make this a factor in the election because it won't come to pass prior to the election. We've got to get the Republicans out, the Democrats in, and then once we have a little power, we can say, all right, motherfuckers, let's talk some business. And that's really the way to do it. Too many people take all the problems all at once. It becomes overwhelming and nothing gets fixed. Focus on one thing. The most important thing is the election in November. Let's get that motherfucker won, and then we'll leave the Republicans hiding under their rocks, and we'll start going after the Democrats and say, now, motherfuckers, it's time you do your bidding or do our bidding and work for us for fucking once. That's the way it needs to be. So we'll see what happens. Don't freak out. We'll be fine. And like I've told people before, that's why I've kind of entered other platforms. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. I'm not all that jazzed about that. The podcast, the Rational Boomer podcast that you're listening to now, will always be available in audio form or in video form on YouTube. And on YouTube, you'll also get all the TikToks. So if for some reason I'm not on TikTok, I'll be somewhere. I ain't going anywhere. I'm riding this thing out till I'm done. Like I say, I'm 64. Who knows when that's going to be? It could be 10 years. It could be 10 minutes. Who the fuck knows? But we'll keep pushing up until the time I can't push anymore. All right. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to the Rational Boomer podcast. I hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.